Well, it's 2 o'clock now, and here's Lucy Skeeping with the Early Music Show.
Welcome to the show. It's International Women's Day today, an opportunity to celebrate the achievements of women all around the world. And here on the Early Music Show, we're making our own contribution by exploring the life and work of a rather remarkable 17th century woman who seems to have defied convention by breaking into male-dominated artistic circles. Some people have seen Barbara Strozzi as a proto-feminist, but we do really need to view her through the prism of her own time. And to help us, I'm joined by Laurie Strass, Professor of Music at the University of Southampton and Co-Director of Musica Secreta, who researches, writes about and performs music associated with early modern women. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Now, I'm really looking forward to hearing about Strozzi and just how she sort of fits in the context of other composers of her time. But first of all, let's hear some music. What are we going to start with?
This is Merce di Voi. It's the first work in her first publication, the Primo Libro di Madrigali a due, tre, quattro e cinque voci of 1644. She dedicates this book to the Archduchess of Tuscany, but I think this is about Barbara herself. She professes gratitude and love to a lucky star. And she also expresses a hope that she will become a new Sappho. So it's really about her as a new composer launching herself onto the scene.
Oh,
Thanks to you, my star of good fortune. The first song published by Barbara Strozzi, performed there by La Veneziana. So, Laurie, it wasn't particularly unusual for a woman to be a musician in the 17th century in Italy, was it? So what is it that makes Barbara Strozzi kind of stand out?
Well, certainly there were female singers and composers in the 17th century, as you say, but she is unusual because she was a published composer. Many women wrote music for themselves to sing and they distributed it in manuscripts, but they didn't have access to the commercial marketplace in the same way that Barbara did.
So when was she born?
She was born in 1619 in Venice, and Venice at the time was alive with music, both in private homes and also more public music and in terms of the early opera and in public gatherings.
Because in England, of course, we didn't have women on the stage at all in that period, did we? But in Italy, then, it was commonplace to have professionals?
Yes, indeed. There had been professional women on the stage since the middle of the 16th century. And even those very early actresses were skilled singers. They had to sing and they had to dance. So the notion of women singing together and singing in a semi-private setting was already part of the culture.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to hear kind of how she got started and what sort of music education she had. But I think we ought to hear another one of her songs first. This is again from her first collection, isn't it? And I think we've got three voices this time.
Yes, that's right. This is the Three Graces singing to Venus. And it uses that distinctive texture of three female voices, which was already part of the commonplace of Italian secular music at this time. They first upbraid and then they praise the goddess for concealing her beauty. And what I really like about this piece is that the opening is so madrigalian, as is the ending. They finish with this beautiful flourish with these complicated intertwined ornamentation. And that is really so characteristic of that three female voice sound.
Giudici, ma 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 giudici,
the Three Graces to Venus, telling her to disrobe, ready for love. And that was the consort of music in fine form. That's kind of rather erotic sentiment. Is that typical of Strozzi?
Yes, it is. In fact, the subject matter of her music is fairly confined to love and the suffering caused by love, or the joy caused by love. And I think that informs her entire style, because she's composing about affect to express and invoke the feelings of love. And it's what's so delightful about her music is that it's, because it's all chamber music, it's all very personal and directed to the audience, or spoken indirectly to the audience. So she's able to experiment with audacious harmonies. She herself called her style, she says, these harmonic notes are the language of the soul and the instruments of the heart.
Let's just go back to the beginning for a moment. Her early life then, was her musical talent sort of fostered and discovered straight away?
Well, it's generally accepted that Barbara was the illegitimate daughter of her adopted father, Giulio Strozzi. And he was a poet and a playwright who collaborated with some of the most important musicians in early 17th century Venice, like Claudio Monteverdi and Francesco Cavalli. In fact, he provided them with opera librettos. And so when she was quite young, he arranged for her to have composition lessons with Francesco Cavalli. And clearly she also showed early promise as a singer. So by her mid-teens, she was performing in her father's house to gatherings of Venetian society and the Venetian literati.
So here she was at her little sort of domestic gathering and singing away, and a young pubescent girl. I mean, was she taken seriously, or was this a little bit dodgy, or perhaps just a little bit of decoration? I mean, how would a young woman really make her mark?
Well, it wasn't very unusual for very young girls to be allowed to perform in sunny public settings. This was an accepted part of what young women did growing up and putting themselves on the marriage market. I mean, there was a time-honoured tradition of having a female figure at the centre of a philosophical discussion that dates back to at least Boccaccio and the Decameron. But she was perhaps a little bit problematic, because although in print dedications her virtues are extolled, there's a set of manuscript satires that must have circulated in the academy in which she came in for a bit of stick. They said, oh, it's a wonderful thing to be giving away the flowers after you've given away the fruit. So there was this suspicions about her propriety as she grew older.
Laurie, our next song is obviously not something that Barbara herself could have sung, because it's for three men.
Yes, this also comes from her first publication, which was a book of ensemble madrigals. And in a way that might seem anachronistic, but it's appropriate for two reasons. It signals that she's a serious composer with proper training. But also, these are participatory works for the Academy. It's a comic male trio. It's a Venetian tradition. And in a way, she's mocking the members of the Academy, because they will have to sing this piece about an old lover who watches his amorous abilities waning, is actually watching his body crumbling before his eyes. And it's called Vecchio Amante che rende la piazza, the old lover who gives up the battlefield.
Senza gloria, senza gloria non sia. Riacchi estinto, estinto, estinto mi veggia. Amor, 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 amor per me padeggia. Thank you.
An old lover who knows his time is up gives in gracefully. A song from Barbara Strozzi's first book of madrigals performed by the Orlando de Lasso Ensemble. Laurie, one thing that's particularly interesting, I think, is that Strozzi was, in fact, a single mother. I should imagine this would have been extremely scandalous in the educated circles that she moved in.
Yes, I mean, you'd think so, wouldn't you? In fact, there were rumours about Barbara being a courtesan, and many of the most skilled female musicians in Venice were in fact courtesans, but there's no evidence that she was, even though she had four children. At least three of those children were with the same father. And it seems that he was a member of the Academy, Giovanni Paolo Widmann, a wealthy German family that had purchased a Venetian title. And there was one story that circulated about their relationship was that Wiedemann had raped her and this had resulted in a pregnancy. But the relationship appears to have been sanctioned by both families. Wiedemann and her father were friends, and Wiedemann's widow actually provided the dowries for Barbara's daughter to enter the convent of Santo Sepolcro after Wiedemann's death.
She must have been very sort of grateful in a way and dedicated to her father's academy because it was such a fantastic platform and opportunity for her to sort of try out songs, I guess. And when her father died, she then published a book which she dedicated to them.
Yes, this first book that she published after her father's death, it's the Opus 3 of 1654, was dedicated to the Accademia degli Incogniti, which was like an umbrella organisation for her father's own academy. But instead of the usual modest dedication, which would play down her abilities and emphasise her feminine fragility, Strozzi only printed two words, Ignote Dei, to the unknown goddess, alongside an image of a veiled woman. Now, this was the emblem of the Incogniti, and the Latin words can also mean of the unknown goddess. So this gesture not only offers her works up to the Academy's emblem, but it also places Strozzi herself metaphorically at the head of the Academy, that she herself is the unknown goddess. Now, this is the last book that she publishes not for solo voice alone, and it's the last that is explicitly linked to this academic world, so it's almost valedictory for her father.
And the song from that book we're going to hear is Lovely Eyes, You Wound Me, Oh Lovely Eyes, Think What Those Kisses So Burning and Biting Would Do.
Yes, it's typical. It's all about the suffering of love and the wounds of the eyes. Think what those kisses might do. You think what those arrows might do.
I Will Not Die Without Revenge, Belli Occhi, performed by Musica Secreta. I'm with the co-director of Musica Secreta today, Laurie Strauss, and we're talking about the composer of that love song, Barbara Strozzi. So far, Laurie, we've heard sort of purely secular, rather passionate songs, but did Strozzi ever write any religious music?
Yes, she published one book of solo sacred song, the Sacri Musicali Affetti of 1655. Now, curiously enough, this book contains some of Strozzi's most vocally challenging music, and so it feels very personal to Strozzi herself. She dedicated it to Anna de' Medici, who was the Archduchess of Innsbruck. The book seems to emphasise motherhood, and the piece that I've chosen is called Mater Anna. Now, St. Anne was Anna de' Medici's personal patron saint and the traditional patron saint of her family, but she was also the mother of the Virgin Mary. So this work invokes the saint and the Virgin and the Christ as a kind of alternative feminine trinity, and it's full of hope for the Archduchess as a mother. And perhaps this text also resonated for Barbara too.
Thank you.
a cantata by Barbara Strozzi, which compares the Archduchess of Innsbruck with Saint Anne, her namesake. Maria Cristina Kier with Concerto Suave. So Strozzi dedicated some of her music to aristocratic patrons, of course. Did she get well paid for such a thing?
We don't know if she received money, but we do know that she received expensive gifts. The Archduchess, on receipt of this book of cantatas, gave her a small gold box adorned with rubies and a necklace of gold and rubies, which it was said that Barbara kept on every day and that she showed it off, placing it between her two darling, beautiful breasts. Well, at least so said the Mantuan ambassador to Venice.
Probably the safest place for it, actually. Talking of her beautiful breasts, I know it was a fashion in those days to portray women in sort of reclining in a classical pose when you were painting their portrait, but I must say her one really does expose a lot of flesh. I mean, we were talking earlier about the scandals involved in her being a single mother. I mean, do you think she was a courtesan of some kind?
I really don't think she was. I think that she was a kept woman. I think she was Wiedemann's mistress, but I don't think that she was a courtesan. And there's another way of looking at that painting, because it invokes both Saint Cecilia there with her viola da gamba, and there's a violin next to her as well, but also Roman Charity, who is almost universally shown in paintings with one breast out, ready to feed as one of the seven acts of mercy. So this painting, we may see it as being scandalous, but it may have been read in a very different way in the 17th century.
Now, you yourself are a practitioner as well as an academic. Do we have any record of the quality of her own singing? Do we know if she actually had a particularly good voice?
Well, there's some relatively standard compliments to her singing and some of the early texts that emerged from her father's academy. But I think we can learn most about her voice simply by listening to her music. She must have had a very flexible voice with an impressive range. And what really stands out about her vocal writing is this fondness for long legato lines, very chromatic, often textless, pure vocal sound. So she really, really enjoyed singing.
We're going to hear a song from her last book, which I imagine is more sophisticated, could I say, than some of her earlier works?
Well, the books at the beginning of her career are mostly ensemble pieces, and the books towards the end of her publishing career are for her voice alone. They seem very connected to her as a singer. And this piece is called L'Astrato. Even though the character of the singer is a man, it's very clear that the character is a wonderful singer. So the poet declares that he wants to sing about his broken heart, and he tries out a series of different kinds of song. None of them satisfy him. He breaks off each time, and eventually he gathers his wits about him and he completes the strophic aria, and he finishes up complaining, "I, wretched and foolish, not wanting to sing, have sung much."
Thank you.
really dramatic performance there. Manuela Galli, the soprano, with La Risonanza. Barbara Strozzi's solo cantata, La Strato, I Want to Sing to Ease My Torment. Let's talk a little bit about Strozzi's later life, Laurie. Did she ever leave Venice?
Well, curiously, she died in Padua. She died in 1677 at the age of 58, and we don't know why she made the trip to Padua, nor why she didn't return home to die, because she was ill for about 3 months. But she was buried in Padua, and no trace of her left in Venice.
She was very much her own woman. I mean, she was obviously very confident, as we've heard, and obviously well connected as well. In your view, was she really something special?
She was unusual and remarkable, not just because she was a female composer, but she was remarkable on her own terms. She is the only Catholic female laywoman to have published sacred music in early modern Europe. And she published more cantatas than Cavalli and Cesti and a whole raft of Roman composers that we now think as the proponents of the early cantata. So she really is remarkable on her own terms.
And certainly from the music we've been hearing, she seems to be as good and often better than many of the male composers in her world. Sadly, we're almost at the end of the programme, but we do have time for one more Strozzi song.
OK, I wanted to finish this selection with one of her most joyous short songs, Amor Dormiglione, or Sleepyhead Cupid. Cupid, no more sleeping, up, up, up. So, of course, it must probably has another meaning as well. And this performance is by the eclectic ensemble Constantinople. The singer Susie LeBlanc is accompanied by baroque strings and instruments from the Indian subcontinent, so there are sitar and percussion in there as well. I think that Barbara, a Venetian woman, would have loved this performance, as Venice was as vibrant and multicultural in the 17th century as it is today.
Laurie Strauss, thank you very much.
So, sedete, sedete, svegliate, o che mentre dormito dormono le gioie mie. Strali, strali, su, su, fuoco, fuoco, su, su, su.
Amore d'Omiglioni, Sleepyhead Cupid, performed by the ensemble Constantinople with the singer Susie LeBlanc, bringing to an end this special International Women's Day edition of the Early Music Show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping, who was talking to Laurie Strass, and the producer was Peter Thresh. The choir at 4 o'clock today will also be celebrating International Women's Day, and Sarah Moore Peach is here to tell us more.
Thank you very much. Yes, today we have two vocal ensembles made up entirely of women who are performing live for us in the studio. One of them is Gaggle. They're a radical, political, feminist, all-female vocal group. And the others are very different kettle of fish indeed. The Girls of St Catherine's Choir from the chapel in Cambridge. And they're going to be joined by the mezzo Sarah Connolly to give the world premiere of a piece which the young Cambridge-based composer Rhiannon Randall has written specially for them and for us for our celebration of International Women's Day. And my choral classic at 5 o'clock is Hildegard of Bingen. Who else?